Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Who, what other podcasts are there out there that we can...
imitate?
Here's what else you need to know today.
On Saturday, President Trump announced legislation... Here's what Democratic lawmakers had to say. This is it right here.
Okay.
The theme show of the Daily, Justin Michael Barbaro's.
Justin Michael Barbaro's. Mm-hmm.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, Paul, Andy and Kelly. For your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and robot butler, Sean Roney.
And I'm legendary hockey trainer, Edwin Janes. And Cherokee Edwin, for short.
And not with us this week in the warehouse, our producer, Mr. Alex Ward, who left us this message before he left.
Hey, everybody, listen up. This is what we're going to do. You sit tight until I return. Sound good? Doesn't matter. It's an order. Follow it blindly. Okay. All right. Ciao. Adios.
Well, Edwin, I don't know about you, but I'm not, I don't want to sit tight and wait for Alex to get back. Let's do an episode.
All right.
And how about, just like the Dunder Mifflin employees, when Michael says that same thing to them, we should dive into Threat Level Midnight.
Yeah, the theme for this week is Threat Level Midnight.
An
episode in season 7 entitled Threat Level Midnight, but it is Michael's screenplay that he wrote, first teased in season 2, episode 7, The Client.
Yep.
And then again, we get this full-length feature film starring all of the characters in The Office at the end of season 7. So we're excited to talk about how that first mention or that read-through that they do in season 2 becomes this fully fleshed out movie in season 7, right, and how it's alluded to along the way. It's a premise that I think we as viewers were not really expecting when it finally comes out.
Right. Like, we didn't actually know that he's making the movie the whole time in between The Client and season 7.
Yeah, and looking back at it, I think it's one of the best uses of the full ensemble in the whole show.
Yeah.
And then it's also perfect sort of fodder for memes, right?
Right.
Like, especially as John Krasinski continues his movie career, you know. Same with Steve Carell, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, Jack Ryan? Nah. Golden Face? Yes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And it's the play within the play, right? Which
right.
is also, those are always fun. Mm-hmm. As you were saying, we get introduced to Threat Level Midnight in The Client, episode 7, season 2, written by Paul Lieberstein and directed by Greg Daniels. Michael and Jan are out on a meeting with a client, Tim Meadows at Chili's.
Christian is his name.
And Michael needs a joke, so he calls Pam and tells her to go through his desk and look for a joke book, and she finds the Threat Level Midnight screenplay in there. And of course, you know, Michael's out of the office, so Jim proposes that they all just, put off their work and read the screenplay together.
One thing I want to mention, I mean, so see, this is a unique episode in that we get Threat Level Midnight, which is so absurd, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but it comes about in a very organic way, right? Michael is out of the office and he calls Pam and asks her to go through his desk, which is how she kind of stumbles upon it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's going on in the A storyline is Michael and Jan are trying to prevent the company from being downsized. There's a threat of if they land this client, mm-hmm. Lackawanna County, they can save the branch, right?
Wow.
So there's real stakes.
So it really is Threat Level Midnight.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. So we're there. in that combination of early seasons where there's this real threat of them going under,
yeah.
right? But at the same time, there can be this really funny, absurd, silly, strange thing going on in the background in a way that doesn't feel maybe as, I don't want to say forced, but in the later seasons, we just kind of expect crazy things to happen all the time.
Yeah, right.
And this feels a little more organic.
Yeah. So they all sit down and decide to start reading the screenplay. Phyllis is playing Catherine Zeta-Jones, the character,
mm-hmm.
Who is Michael Skarn's secretary / you know, she's in love with him.
Mm-hmm. First message is from me. I love you.
That's from me.
Can never work, Catherine. Not in 1,000 years.
Get off my desk. Dwight, as they are as they're picking roles, Dwight comes in and it starts telling people that they're not allowed to do this, and you know it's wrong to make fun of Michael's screenplay. But Jim offers him the role of Michael Skarn, and so Dwight is in to that. Sits down and plays the lead until he discovers that the Dwigged.
Right, the single dick. So Ryan is playing Samuel L. Chang, Michael's robot butler assistant.
Yeah.
Who?
I forget it, brother. Yeah.
Agent Michael Scott.
Yeah.
Word. The character's name is Samuel L. Chang. Michael does a search and replace, leaving one Dwight. D-W-I-G-H-T. Right. So Dwight kind of storms off. But
yeah.
We get this sort of unique look into Michael's psyche where he is a secret agent, where he is, you know, king of the world, where he can, where he's the star of his own movie, right?
Right.
This showbiz dream that never dies, despite that he lives in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and, you know, is rapidly aging out of the leading man age group.
Yeah. I think some other roles we see in this are, I think Oscar plays Golden Face. Jim's reading the stage directions. It is funny that you brought that up, though, about Michael, you know, them having to actually kind of save the branch. And in a way, Michael is kind of the hero of this episode. He's the one who, you know, he gets the girl in the end.
Yeah. He also, you know, talks about them having a signal in case one of them gets in a jam.
Right.
He's like, that was her fault. Yeah. He's like, I wouldn't have had to say nonsense words.
Right.
So, yeah, Michael does kind of guide the sales meeting to avoid sort of talking about the actual business dealing. Focus instead on an awesome blossom, extra blossom, and perhaps baby back ribs.
I want my baby back.
But what we see from Michael is his sort of sales prowess, right? That is alluded to or shown a few different times through the course of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he does kind of play the card. He's like, I'm from Scranton. Like, I know exactly, you know, I'm from this community,
right.
And like, I don't want to see it. You know, the big box or the corporate chains will come in. They'll kill us, and then they'll raise all the prices.
Yeah, you know? He's got his sleeves rolled up.
Oh, one small detail that I noticed in rewatching this was that Jan starts to lay out the details at the very beginning of the episode,
right.
And she goes, okay, we've got the county has 13 schools, 2 hospitals, and Michael is like, ooh, graphs and charts, looks like USA Today, right? And then when Michael is talking to Christian later at the Chili's, he's like, listen, I'm from Scranton. He's like, I know here, I'm from here, I know how many hospitals there are and how many schools there are. He literally references...
I've never caught that either.
It was the he references the one detail that Jan talks about. Yeah.
Right, and he... Oh, that's so good. And he's not paying attention when she's doing that. That's fantastic. I think this is a great premise for this episode, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, besides Threat Level Midnight itself, it's just fun to see... the office workers doing a table read, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that that's really fun. You know, I work in film, so sometimes I get scripts all the time and stuff like that. So we've actually done some camping trips before where I'll bring
a
script.
Yeah, we have.
And we'll do a reading because it's like, it's fun.
To do,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone gets to play a character. People have to read the stage directions aloud. It's just a fun time. So I thought that was, it's just nice to watch them having fun.
In rewatching this episode a couple times too, the timeline is really fuzzy in
that
it opens in a meeting in the conference room with Jan and Michael, And Michael's, you know, he says, all right, like, you guys can go home. We're going to go for this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And Jan says, you know, do you always close the branch when you leave for an hour?
Right, right.
Or whatever. And Michael has to he negotiates with himself.
Yeah, they get more work done when I'm not here.
He's like, that's not true. They get the same amount of work done whether I'm here or not.
And that's when he launches into that.
Yeah,
that,
stay here until I come back.
Listen up, everybody. This is what we're going to do.
Right. But he clearly doesn't come back. And it's shown, like, this meeting continues well on into the night.
Right.
And they're doing the table read, and then eventually, you know, they go upstairs because Dwight and Kevin, you know, Dwight says, anyone who wants to see a real show, come up with me. I have some fireworks.
Yeah.
We light them off in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And then Jim and Pam go up to the roof with Jim's famous grilled cheese sandwich.
Right, right.
And they watch the show.
Yeah.
But it's just not really, they don't really talk about how they have to wait for Michael.
Well, Dwight never left.
Dwight never leaves. He wakes up with the space blanket on the couch.
In his tidy whities.
But there is a scene where Jim and Pam are like waiting to go home.
Yeah.
You know? And I think Roy has already left maybe because.
He stops by when they're doing the table read.
Right.
At one point, and she's like, I got to stay and wait.
And he's like, seriously? Dwight's making gunshot noises. Yeah. Pow, pow, pow. Right. But it's just funny that they never acknowledge, like, when they actually do decide to leave and how late they end up staying.
Right, you know? Right.
Not that it really matters. You're more caught up in the Jim and Pam drama of it all.
Mm-hmm.
I think, so one thing I wanted to mention, and I don't mean to dwell too much on the client, let's get to season seven, but I did watch the deleted scenes kind of prep for this, and there is some extended table read footage where Jim says, bullets are flying everywhere. Michael Scarn kicks open the plane door with a karate chop.
Kicks open the plane door with a karate chop.
And Dwight is sitting at his desk watching them because
he's already quit.
This is post-twicked.
Okay.
Right? And he says, kicking a chop are different things. And Jim says, it's just a movie, Dwight. And Dwight says, that doesn't make any sense. And Oscar says, yeah, now it doesn't make sense. And then it's like Michael Scarn looks around. Bullets are flying. Agent Chang, don't jump, Agent Scarn. There are no parachutes. A bullet hits Samuel L. Chang. And Pam says, oh, so close to retirement. And then it ends with one more bullet flies towards Michael Scarn, but he jumps out of the plane without a parachute. And that's the end of the screenplay.
Oh, my gosh.
And then as a tag to the end of the deleted scenes, it's Jim. The whole thing is framed by first date stories.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we find out that, you know, Roy left Pam at a minor league hockey game or whatever.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And Jim and Pam go on their little rooftop date. And then the next morning, Jim is like, you could say that we had our first date last night. And Pam's like, I don't know about that.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's very awkward.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jim says, well, Lisa didn't leave you at a hockey game. Pam is kind of cold to him. And then the episode closes with Michael and Jim sort of sharing this look.
From
the next day. The last scene is them, like, looking, you know, Jim looks into Michael's office, and they both kind of shrug at each other.
Right.
Because Jan has called Michael and been like, did you slip me anything?
Oh, my God.
Michael is curled up under his desk to avoid the cameras.
Right,
he's like,
right.
No, I did not purposely get you drunk.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. Yeah. Oh, my God.
He's like, I miss you. Yeah. But at the end of the deleted scenes, we get a Jim saying, what was my worst first date? And he's like, well, you know, it was actually just down the street here at Gugino's. We had just met. We were working together. We had lunch. We hit it off. It felt like we were having a really good time. And then I found out she was engaged, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So it's kind of this sort of bittersweet talking head. It doesn't make it into the show.
Yeah.
But it's just another little button on that episode. But anyway, let's move to season seven.
Yeah.
Let's move to the main event, Threat Level Midnight.
Episode 17 of season 7.
Really quickly, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Let's capture where it's alluded to, because Threat Level Midnight is alluded to a couple times in between season 2 and season 7.
Oh, please, yeah.
So
I didn't catch that.
It's alluded to in Email Surveillance in season 2,
mm-hmm.
When Michael is at improv, and every scene he, you know, has a gun.
Yeah, yeah, and he's
kicks
always
in the door. Boom, Agent Michael Scoon, FBI.
Yeah, yeah, he's always
Agent
changing.
Michael Scarn, FBI.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Michael Scarn comes up several times, right? He calls David Wallace's office at one point.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't have that one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, this is Michael. Yeah. In Money, when he's at the call center and he's like talking about Die Hard with all the people there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, man, you're really good at this. You should review movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I'm actually writing a movie. And they're like, really? And he says, yeah, it's kind of a spy thriller thing. Right. And then later in the dinner party episode, when Jan is pitching her candles,
mm-hmm.
it's Bonfire. Michael's like, Bonfire, James Bonfire. And he goes, Agent Michael's gone.
Yeah.
Shoots finger guns. Right? And then later in that episode, they're talking about Hunter. And at the dinner table, and Jan says, well, at least he's an artist. And Michael says, well, I'm a screenwriter.
My gosh. Wow.
Yeah. So I think those are the interim
right
between season 7. So here we are, season 7, episode 17.
Written by BJ Novak, directed by Tucker Gates. I did look him up. He just is he's a hard-working television director, jumps around a lot between shows. So this episode, of course, opens up with a delivery man who we've never seen before coming in saying that he has a delivery for Michael Skarn. Michael says, leave it at reception. He says, I got to deliver this one in person and start shooting. Michael's dodging bullets like it's the Matrix. I did, you know, in doing some research on this episode, people point out like, oh, you know, we never see this. We have no idea who
that
this
guy is,
delivery
yeah.
man is. And I was thinking about that, and it's like, well, gosh, it has to be someone we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to know it's the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, if one of the warehouse workers is like, delivery for Michael, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It has to be someone else, because it's kind of a tease.
Needs to be a surprise.
Right. Because then, of course, after Michael shoots the delivery man and says, clean up on aisle 5, he introduces the movie. Threat Level Midnight, and it's finally complete.
In doing preparation for this, I did read this long Q&A with BJ Novak specifically about this episode, and I think and he was really gracious with his time and sort of answering all these questions. And he talked a lot about the different hair and makeup, why certain characters win it or not. So I'm gonna sort of
okay.
pepper that
yeah.
in as we talk about
yeah,
it, just
because yeah.
there's a lot of really great commentary and reasoning why certain things are shot the way they are.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, because this episode in particular is such a great collection of the whole cast. Of a show that, like, you know, utilizing its continuity without being really hacky or really self-referential.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to do a bunch of jokes that are so backward-facing, like, you do it in the context of this ridiculous comedy movie.
Right,
that
right.
Michael has made, yeah.
Right, and I do love that, too. Like, you know, it's everyone's in it, and we're also, all of the locations, all the sets are locations we know from the show for
mm-hmm.
the most part, being dressed in different ways and stuff like that. So that's really fun, too. I guess, you know, the cast of the movie, I think, is worth going over really quick. Obviously, Michael Scott is Michael Skarn. Dwight is playing Samuel L. Chang.
I think it's important to note that he's not referred to as Samuel L. Chang.
Right.
He's only ever referenced as Samuel. And in
yep.
the Q&A, BJ Novak said, like, his reasoning is that Michael couldn't find an actor to play a character who could convincingly be Samuel L. Chang, so they just called him Samuel instead of Dwight.
Yeah. yeah, yeah. Oh, that's good. Jim, of course, is Golden Face, the villain. Jenna Fisher is billed as Sandra, but she's just a hostage.
Yeah, and so we'll get to this as well.
Okay,
but
okay.
I watched on the DVDs. There is a full, full uncut Michael
right.
Scott. It's called a Michael Scott joint. Threat Level Midnight.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a 25-minute, half-hour sort of thing. It's a lot of the stuff you see in the episode,
yeah.
but there's a lot of stuff in between, and Pam has a lot more lines.
Okay, okay. Yeah, BJ Novak is the NHL coach. Andy is Billy the bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley is the narrator. And do we see him also as a hostage? Perhaps?
No, the
okay.
hostages are Kelly, Kevin,
right.
Toby, Pam, and season 2, Roy.
Creed Creed Bratton as Cherokee Jack, Michael's hockey coach. We got Meredith is a bachelor party girl. Mindy Kaling, a hostage. Angela Martin, a
bachelor
party
girl. Same with Phyllis.
Toby is the hostage slash animal rapist, convicted animal rapist who gets his head blown off. Oscar is a speed skater who wins the mm-hmm. speed skating competition and gets murdered.
With the American flag.
That's right.
That's what Michael uses. That's what Michael uses. The American flag.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Daryl is the president. He points out that he gave up a lot of weekends.
A lot of time. Yeah, and extra, so that his daughter could see what it would look like for there to be a black president.
What a waste of time. Phyllis is a bachelor party girl. We got Jan as Jasmine Winsong.
There's even more. Troy plays
yep.
The Golden Faces henchman.
Yeah.
Who shoots the blow dart at Jasmine Winsong. you know what? I also found out that Tony Gardner...
Yeah. I was just gonna say this.
Yeah,
it's so hard to see in the actual episode. Did you see more of him in the extended cut?
There's a really funny moment where what happens is like Tony Gardner's playing the piano and she's singing, and then it just cuts to Michael Scott at the piano bench, right?
Yeah. I know, he's just sitting there not
but
playing.
But there's a scene where he's like, there's a scene where Michael Scott goes up to Tony on the piano bench. He says something like, "Beat it, loser." Or he's like, "Get out of here."
Yeah.
And the guy, and he just goes, "Okay, mister." That's the whole exchange.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, just kind of speaking about Tony, I loved how they play with the, there's the people who are from the show in the past, mm-hmm. obviously like Karen Filippelli,
mm-hmm.
who's got the one line, "You ever bang a whole bachelorette party, baby?" they get a talking head with her in a parking lot that she's like, "Why are you singling out my line after all these years?"
And Karen was quoted, or Karen, Rashida Jones was quoted as saying it was like a time warp to be asked to go back to the office for this one day of shooting or this one scene, I guess.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But just in general, it's really nice to see the whole cast utilized and kind of woven together in a way.
Mm-hmm.
That is doesn't feel overstuffed, you know, because
mm-hmm.
the movie moves through so many different periods and different scenes. I think a notable omission from the movie is Erin.
Oh, okay. She's in the extended cut?
She doesn't appear at all in Thread.
No, she doesn't. And she's one of the most excited people to watch.
Yeah. The reasoning BJ Novak gave is that the last 2 years were like editing.
It's worth pointing out, Michael does say exactly what the timeline of making the movie is. After 3 years of writing, 1 year of shooting, 4 years of reshooting, and 2 years of editing, I have finally completed my movie, Threat Level Midnight. So this is season 7, so he's been editing since season 5. And, I mean, it's funny because he's basically saying that he'd already started filming it when the employees of the office find the screenplay in season 2.
Yeah, there's a really good thing from BJ Novak in where he talks about, and I'm gonna reference this a lot.
Yeah, that's good. I love
because
it
because this is our.
I haven't watched it, so
this is our primary source document. I mean, it's a written interview. You can find it if you look it up. It's alluded to in the Wikipedia page for this episode as well.
Cool.
An easy way to find it. But basically, he talks about how the joke isn't that Michael is bad at making a movie.
Mm-hmm.
The joke is that Michael worked so hard and so diligently mm-hmm. on making something that is totally ridiculous.
Right.
Like, that's what's funny about it. You know? Like, so he didn't want it to be like that he didn't know how to shoot or edit.
Right.
Because we see him edit other movies
right.
over the course of The Office, right?
Yeah, the commercial that they make.
The commercial, the video that he shows David Wallace.
Right, yeah.
Over that U2 song.
Yeah.
Try walking a mile in Stanley's shoes.
Right.
Or try Phyllis's pants.
You know, another thing I did see someone else posted on the Dunderpedia for this, for Threat Level Midnight. Erin is not in the movie because they say he's been editing it for 2 years, but Helene is in the movie.
Right, yeah.
Who he only started dating in season 6.
Mm-hmm. It's not perfect.
It makes sense that he could have totally filmed that scene with Helene
mm-hmm.
in season 6 and then added it into the movie.
We also see him like really play up the scenes where he can have romantic drama or tension with these different female characters. The bachelorette party.
Yeah.
You know, Helene is the nurse.
Yeah.
Jasmine Winsong.
Yeah.
BJ Novak, again, asked like, you know, if there was one character that you wanted to get in the show. And he says he wanted Amy Adams.
Oh.
To come back as like a floozy
that would have been
in
great.
Bed with Michael Scarn before Dwight wakes him up with a mission for the
oh
president.
My god.
Yeah, yeah. But I think she was busy with she wasn't available to film
one of her Oscar nominated films
or
something.
She's like, yeah, I'm making Arrival.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not really it.
Right. I love to the way that they use the location. So of course the conference room the president's office.
Mm-hmm.
We've got where there's a lot of decoration that they've added. That window to the hallway in the annex
mm-hmm.
is now like some beautiful garden or something like that. And then there's the giant Abraham Lincoln frame Which, of course, Michael smashes over Daryl's head when they're shooting at him. Of course, Michael's condo, which there's candelabras everywhere. Mm-hmm. I can only assume that he had left over from when Jan was the Serenity by Jan. The warehouse is where the hostages are being kept. Mm-hmm. There's just, it's supposed to be underneath the hockey rink. So there's just a sign that they've placed above the hostages that says Zamboni parking only.
The concession stand workers.
Yeah. That's the only change they made. Very little decoration down there. Jim is just sitting in a office chair the whole time.
They did a really good job of replicating the look and feel of the characters in earlier seasons. So in the hostage scene, it's all season two, right?
Right.
So that's how Pam is wearing like that blue and white striped button down that she's always wearing in season two. Jim, his haircut looks like season two.
Right.
Same
BJ
with
Novak's
Roy.
Hair is kind of scruffy.
Yeah. In the Q&A with BJ Novak, he talks about how, and I guess there's also some lines from the costume or hair and makeup people, and they talked about the different adjustments they had to make. So they had, like, they had DVDs to look at how the characters were presented in the first few seasons so they could help dress them that way. But there is one scene where I think Pam says they did a test showing of it at one point, and everyone thought it was a comedy. So everybody's laughing in the conference room, and
right,
it's like,
right. Oh yeah, yeah.
Jim, Pam, Ryan, Creed, Kevin,
yeah, yeah,
Kelly,
yeah,
and Michael gets up and turns it off, right?
Yeah.
And I guess the only makeup adjustment they had to make was to glue sideburns onto Ryan, you know, and he's wearing the bright blue shirt that he wears all the time in the
right,
early seasons
right.
as well. So
yeah, I did. I caught that scene too, and I was like, oh, okay, they've only put a few of them in there, so there's no like, oh, there's Karen watching it,
right.
or you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They just pick the people who are always there. Of course, you know, we've been to the ice rink before for Michael's birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And which is where, you know, where he runs into Carol taking her kids on a birthday party.
Speaking
too.
Of Carol, I don't know how, you know, you watch these episodes, you know, and then however much time passes, or you maybe, I don't know about you, but sometimes I have it on in the background when I'm doing something else. Or, you know, you watch them here and there, but like, you forget the small jokes and the small details. And when they pan out on Scarn Manor, it's just Carol Still's realtor at the bottom. It's just like a picture of a house that Carol is selling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny that Carol wasn't able to come back for that. But yeah. The only one that I couldn't place was the Funky Cat, which is the hippest jazz club in town.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like pipe and drape everywhere, and there's blue lights, and they have a baby grand piano. That one seemed a little outrageous. I didn't understand how Michael put that one together.
in the full cut of Threat Level Midnight, there's a moment where Michael goes up to this person and taps them on the shoulder, and he says, "Are you Jasmine Winsong?" And it turns around, and it's Meredith wearing a fake mustache, and she goes, "I'm a man." And she's like, "Jasmine Winsong's up there." And she's, it's Jan on the piano.
And then Jan goes, "They call me Jasmine Winsong."
What an unnecessary joke at Meredith's expense. Like, why were they so mean to Meredith?
I'm a man.
And while we're there, there's an amazing exchange in this sort of thing where there's a lot of Michael Scarn and Jan, or in Jasmine Winsong, talking at the piano. And the narrator's like, if he was going to find out about those hostages, Scarn knew he had to make her fall in love with him. So he started being himself. And he's playing the piano in like a really robotic way.
Yeah.
And he's describing himself, and he's like, I love fish sandwiches. I love babies. I love puppies. He's like, might just be me, but I think of them as baby dogs. And he says, I would describe myself as part Bruce Wayne, part Bruce Willis, and part Bruce Valanche.
Bruce! Then Troy hits Jan in the
throat,
neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
With the blow dart, yeah.
Which is just such a, yeah. Check, please. Michael says.
I love Creed as the hockey trainer, Cherokee Jack.
Yeah.
He has to get into the All-Star game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another opportunity for Michael Scott to show off his figure skating skills.
Kind of a wax on, wax off reference there. Maybe it's a Karate Kid.
I think a huge piece of this episode that we haven't touched on is the fact that it's not just this fake movie that Michael has made. There is a big opportunity for Michael to show emotional growth in this episode, which is, you know, Michael... The episode starts with Aaron dragging Michael out into the main area from the kitchen and saying that, hey, everyone, just so we know, our own Michael Scott has created the movie, but he's only going to show it if everyone is dying to see it.
Yeah, right.
And Michael says, don't put words in my mouth, which clearly means that Michael fed her the line.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So they all get to see it and they're all like, nobody laughs. So we get to watch the whole thing.
Right. Oh, yeah. Pam has that great part where she goes, you know, nobody laugh. Everyone just have fun, good energy, and we'll all have a great day. And then Creed goes, thanks, Mom.
of course, the episode goes on, and Michael brings Holly, and Holly didn't even know that this existed.
Right.
And Jim starts laughing when, to move ahead in the Threat Level Midnight plot, Michael Scarn goes to the bar to regain his self-confidence, right?
Right.
And during the Scarn, right, the Scarn dance, Jim can't handle it. He starts laughing, and Todd Packer says, if doing the Scarn is gay, I'm the biggest queer on earth.
Yeah. Right?
Todd Packer's role is the drunk in the bar.
Right.
In the deleted scene, Packer's like, the Scarn, huh? Sounds pretty gay.
Oh, okay.
And Michael Scarn goes, it is gay and straight and black and white and young and old. It's for everyone. Right.
Yeah.
So when Jim starts to laugh, Michael gets up and he's really upset, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has this exchange with Holly where, you know, he's like, this is my dream, 11 years. He's like, all this time I could have been working on the Scarn Nebulous. And Holly's like, for your dream, you never talk about it. You know,
yeah.
He's like, if I don't have this, what do I have? He's like, I have my book, Somehow I Manage. Mm-hmm. I have my stand-up special, Here I Go Again, .. And he's like, but I don't know. I don't have, you know, he's like, what else do I have? And Holly says, you know, you can't think of anything else that you have.
Right.
He's like, nothing that's real. And she goes, well, I am real. And he goes, yeah.
Yeah, real pain in the ass. I'm sorry I called you a pain in the ass. I love you.
I'm going to go watch the movie with people who love the movie. I'm sorry, and I love you. Right?
Yeah.
That's a little bit of emotional triage that we don't see from Michael.
Hmm.
And in that, you know, when Michael ruins something, he burns it. Like, he nukes it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a line in one of the episodes where he says, and later on, when I am ruining everything, you really want me on your side.
Yeah, right.
You know? And there's that moment where Michael he said something really hurtful, right? And he's still going. He's still sort of spewing.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I'm sorry, I love you, right?
Right.
To a person who's going to forgive him.
Right, right.
Which I think
you can see it on Holly's face that she's like, okay, well.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, what's your favorite part? And she's like, I like that you got to make this movie with all your friends, right?
Yeah, right.
But eventually, Michael comes around. He realizes that, you know, it's all pretty ridiculous and that he doesn't have to worry.
Well, they're sitting there watching the movie, and he runs onto the ice at one point. Well, in the movie, he's stopping the bomb is in the puck, so mm-hmm. he's got to get on the ice and get in the game. But he reveals while they're watching that he actually ran onto like a kid's
high school championship state hockey game.
Yeah, yeah, championship game, and they had to forfeit.
Undefeated season. Yeah, yeah.
He completely ruined it for them. Which I feel bad for whoever was holding the camera that day, I guess, who went with Michael.
Dwight, probably.
Yeah, right. You can only assume. But yeah, and then he gets shushed. That's when he starts to realize, oh yeah, this movie is dumb and it's not all about me, and he gets Holly to come back.
Well, he talks to Holly and she says, your movie's really good, and he goes, no, it's not, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Right? And that sort of, I mean, it's a pretty big leap for him to make to figure that out, but that he does at all is sort of this growth from Michael that we don't really see, you know?
Yeah.
Michael... I mean, in the early seasons, this kind of thing happens, and the whole thing is that Michael doesn't learn a lesson, you know, or that Michael's lesson it doesn't stick. He like can't, he still can't get it right, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment in the Woof.com episode, and I guess this isn't from an earlier season, but where they're all talking about like, who wants to sell? I, and Michael goes, I will not sell.
Yeah, right.
And Daryl is like, what's wrong with you? What happened to you in high school? And in season seven, so much of what we see at the end and in this long exit for Michael Scott.
Yeah, right.
And taking off with Holly and flying off to the sunset in Boulder.
Right.
Mountain ton. is these little sort of periods or pockets of growth. And this is a big one, you know?
Yeah, that's yeah. That's a good point to bring it up and thinking about that. It's not very much longer after this that Michael Scott leaves the show. This is episode 17 of season 7, so it's at least past halfway through.
And if you want to talk about this episode and The Client sort of as mirrors for each other, right? Think about in The Client, the A story is about Michael and Jan trying to save the branch from being downsized, and the B story is kind of all of them reading Michael's screenplay, right? Mm-hmm. And if you flip it to look at season 7, the A story is them watching the realized version of Michael's movie, and then the B story is Michael and Holly and Michael sort of coming to terms with the fact that this movie isn't that good, but that's okay, right? Mm. And if you think about it that way, early seasons, right, where are the stakes, right? The stakes are in the branch not getting downsized and people keeping their jobs and them, like, fighting on to sell paper one more day, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where are the stakes in season 7? It's Michael and Holly, right? Hmm. Are they going to be okay? You know, what's going to happen with their relationship? Is Michael going to burn it all?
Right, right.
With this person who's a perfect match for him, right? So what is at stake, right? And it's at the beginning of the show, it's the branch and it's the company, it's downsizing, and at the end of the show, it's relationships, it's emotional, it's the emotional romantic stuff,
right? Yeah, yeah. The corporate stuff really doesn't matter that much as the show goes on. Mm-hmm. Going back and watching them back to back, I kind of like, you know, watching The Client, it is kind of nice to go back to those episodes where things are a little simpler almost when that's the conflict. But that's a great point. I hadn't thought about the episode in the context of, we're trying to, close out this character essentially. So he learns a big lesson just a few episodes before his exit.
And again, to kind of continue this in the extended Threat Level Midnight movie, there's a moment where the president is like, "All right, Michael Scarn, or all right, Agent Scarn, like, here's what's going on, you know, go." So the real context, and BJ Novak alludes to this, is that Golden Face Scarn stops Golden Face from blowing up the MLB All-Star Game, the NFL All-Star Game, the NBA All-Star Game. And Scarn takes one day off to go on a charity 20K run with his friend Robin Williams, and Golden Face blows up the WNBA All-Star Game in which Catherine Zeta-Jones was playing.
Right.
So that's that's what Daryl says as the president, right?
Yeah.
And now he's going to blow up the NHL All-Star Game.
Mm-hmm.
And Dwight, as Samuel says, why not just cancel the game? And Daryl says, it would cost too much money. And Michael Scarn says, money. It's always about money. If I ever start a business, we won't even care about money. And then later on in the episode, there's a scene where we get to learn the origins of Golden Face.
Uh-huh.
And in the episode that made it to air, it's Michael and Holly are kind of talking over this. But Pam says to Jim, why is your face gold? And Jim says, why do you care? And Pam says, I was just making conversation, right? Like, that's all we hear.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
But in the full extended cut, there's a scene where they, at the beginning, Golden Face leaves the Maloney's. He's like, well, I'm going to go do some drugs. None of you try anything. And they have this conversation about electing a leader. And Pam's character says, I think I should be the leader. I am a general, a cop, and a negotiator. Basically, I'm a mom.
Oh, my God.
And they're like, now's your chance. You can talk to Golden Face. There's also a great moment where Golden Face comes back and goes, ah, those drugs really hit the spot.
I love, way that Michael writes a villain is, I'm going to dig up your dead wife and hump her real good.
Jim is like, not a big fan of the dialogue.
Yeah.
But anyway, Pam's character makes an appeal to Golden Face. Mm-hmm. He says, why is your face gold? You know, I was just making conversation. And Golden Face says, you really want to know? He's like, I used to work in a gold factory, and our boss didn't, all he cared about was money. He didn't give us lunch breaks, so we had to eat the gold. And one day I looked in the mirror and my whole face was gold. And he thought that maybe if he could blow up all the All-Star games, it would cause all the trophies to explode, and then everyone would have golden faces.
Oh my gosh!
That's the motivation. It's all about money, right? And how money is the root of all evil. Yeah,
that's hysterical. That's right. And then we learn, of course, later that the president is also bad because he's trying to collect the insurance money.
on the arena. The president of the United States is trying to collect insurance, is running an insurance scam on an arena.
Of course, the movie ends with Daryl giving Michael another mission, and Andy points out, isn't the president bad? It becomes clear that Michael just forgot that.
It's funny that you mentioned Andy, because one thing that came up in that BJ Novak Q&A is, like, why is it, like, we love Andy as the bartender.
Yeah.
And BJ Novak said that was a decision where Michael writes Andy as this antiquated bartender stereotype because Michael doesn't have any sort of familiarity with working class bars, right?
Right.
And then when Andy plays that character, Andy has even less familiarity with working class bars. So he's really overdrawn. He's like, you think you got problems? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
30 bucks a month.
Game.
Yeah, yeah. We got sports games again. You know? Yeah. Never change, Billy. Yeah.
Ooh, I see what you mean about problems. I love that Andy's like lip syncing all of his lines. He's mouthing all of his lines as he watches the movie.
And when you talk about the song that closes the episode, threat level what?
Midnight.
Threat level who?
Michael Scarn.
Threat level why? Apartheid. We gotta end it. Free Mandela, peace, I'm out.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a scene where it says threat level midnight, words and lyrics by Mike, or words and music by Michael Scott, performed by Andy Bernard. Inspired by the music of Will Smith. It was like all the pop raps that Will Smith does for all of his movies, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, any favorite moments from Threat Level Midnight?
I mean, we've covered quite a few.
Yeah.
A couple of small things that I noticed is that when time passes, like 3 days of training passes, and it's just Michael's Dave Barry joke of the day calendar pages.
Right, right. Yeah, falling on the ground. I did notice that.
And then when the movie first starts and it's panning over the pictures and it's like Scarn Manor. And
yeah,
it's
all
like
the newspaper
Scarn
clippings.
Marys, and it's a locket, like the two sides of a heart locket. And one is Michael and Catherine Zeta-Jones together on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And as it pans over, the other picture in the locket is Michael kneeling, crying at her grave. Like the,
oh my
the
God.
Other picture in the locket is him crying at
oh
her.
My God. So good.
And there's so many just little things like that. Like in the deleted scene when Michael picks up that phone and he's like, "Michael, we have Agent Scarn. We have one more mission for you." And he's like, I'm in, right?
Yeah.
In the deleted scene, Samuel holds up his hand for a high five, and Michael just looks at him and shakes his head at Dwight, and Dwight puts his hand back down.
Dwight especially was, like, making me laugh so much. After when they're underneath the hockey stadium, Goldenface tells Michael Scarn, you know, I won't blow up the stadium if you forgive me for killing your dead wife or for murdering your wife. And as Michael is thinking, it's kind of like a slow motion push on him right before he kind of is remembering all of these times.
It's the same emotional music every time.
Right, yeah. But behind him, Dwight is just doing robot arms. He's like really worried and like
taking the bullet from Michael was not in the script.
Yeah.
I wanted him to talk like this. Yeah. A couple of little things from the deleted scenes. Threat Level Midnight, a Michael Scott joint. In the intros, it's like Michael Scott, James Halpert, DK Schrute, and introducing Ryan Howard. That's how the opening credits lay out. And then the closing credits, the last picture is of Michael in the hockey jersey, looking up at the camera, and I'll show you guys. We'll post a photo of this.
Okay,
but it just says a great Scott production.
Oh my gosh, that's oh, that's good.
And then one last thing. Oh, at the very end of there's a deleted, like it's I guess it's technically a deleted scene because it's in the full cut of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a post credit scene, like in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where Michael Scarn is in his bathrobe. And he's like, "Are you still here?" The movie's over.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And
then Dwight comes out.
Still wearing his tuxedo. And they're like, go home. He's gone. And they're like, look at those floors. Could they be any stickier?
Right.
Like, this guy's just here for the popcorn. Right. Like, they're just trying to make jokes. And it's clear each of them are trying to get the last word in.
Right.
They're like, go home, go home, go home. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
But I mean, look, just to put a button on it to wrap it everything up.
Yeah.
It's amazing that they could plant a seed like this in season two and then have it come back in season seven. I guess it was Steve Carell's idea.
Oh, cool.
In a way that we as audience members were not expecting. You know?
Right.
Like, we never expected to see a full threat level Midnight movie. But it was just kind of a funny thread that ran throughout the show. And then to have it come to life in a way that, you know, having it be sort of a show within a show, right? Mm-hmm. Play within a play, whatever.
Yeah.
As a vehicle for Michael to kind of grow emotionally, like, makes it really rewarding as part of Michael's character arc winding down and wrapping up.
Right, right.
So all of that together, I mean, it's a great little chunk of The Office, right?
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. It's fun to see the all the employees acting, you know, pretending to be mm-hmm. other people. I think a lot of people did a great job of being bad actors, you know? I rewatched it like about three times preparing for this, and each time it was just as funny.
And I think Threat Level Midnight is a perfect vehicle for the cast to be really over the top without having it be super corny.
Mm-hmm.
I think BJ Novak mentioned that like all the actors on the show love when they get to like play really funny. You know, mm-hmm. like John Krasinski loves when he gets to play something really silly, like couldn't mm-hmm. wait to put on the gold face paint,
yeah,
you know, and the speed skating suit or whatever. and it's a way that allows them to do that without being super, I don't even know what the word is, but like without it just being super hacky. Like,
yeah.
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 It's the mind of Michael Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that wraps it up.
I think that wraps it up. Yeah. Yeah. Now it's time for a new segment called Pam's Art Show.
Do you have something in your pocket?
So, as I mentioned a couple episodes back, our good friend Pat gave me a gift.
Oh, yeah.
In Los Angeles when I was visiting him. And now that we have moved into this Airstream trailer podcast studio that, you know, we share with other people, of course, there's little pieces of art and little artifacts up from other podcasts. I think that we can pin this up somewhere or stick it up somewhere. Because
wow, that's awesome.
And I'll post a picture of this on Facebook. But Pat did a little watercolor of the office building, just like Pam's, that Michael ends up purchasing.
That's beautiful.
And it says art, the Michael Scott Podcast Co. at the top.
His art is the prettiest art of all the art.
So yeah, thank you so much, Pat. Like I said, I'll post this up on the social medias, but I think we're gonna put this up in our studio somewhere.
That's super cool. I think that'd be really cool if the letters, add to the collage. I think they're very particular, I've heard, about what goes up, but
uh-huh.
but we'll see. There are people who have their Polaroids and stuff up around.
Yeah,
so
yeah. I think we might be able to. I think
you know.
We can sneak it in somewhere.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So thank you so much, Pat. And if anyone else has any artwork that they'd ever love to share with us, we love to see stuff like that. We can post some of our favorites up on Instagram or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, this episode is a little different because we don't have Alex here.
Yeah.
Considerably fewer drops and quotes coming in. I'm sure we'll have that again next time.
Yeah.
This isn't really room for a segment. One thing I wanted to mention or recommend to other fellow Office fans out there is Rainn Wilson did appear on the You Made It Weird podcast with Pete Holmes a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I was listening to that. He talks a lot about his Baha'i faith, his spirituality. He's a very deeply spiritual person.
Mm-hmm.
He runs Soul Pancake,
right?
Which is a website and has a lot of very uplifting
book
things.
Too, yeah.
Kid President went viral a few years ago, and he has a book called The Bassoon King. But anyway, it's a really interesting look at Rainn Wilson, the person, in a way that is very different from Dwight. In that he talks about the Baha'i faith so openly,
mm-hmm.
And it's a faith that I was not so familiar with. So, a recommendation.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, our fellow Office fans.
Yeah, that's great. Pete Holmes, of course, is, you know, kind of a religious, spiritual guy. And mm-hmm. so that makes sense that they'd have a long conversation about that.
One very small thing that I forgot to include from the client is that when Dwight and Kevin are lighting off fireworks, you can see that Jim and Pam are on the roof and they're looking across to this empty lot that's across the street.
Right, right.
And having been there a few months ago, that's buildings now.
Right, right.
Like, that lot doesn't exist anymore. You know?
And I think that we see that even in Money when Michael is running across the street.
Yeah, to get to the train, yeah. Very small detail, but something that I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Of course, tune in next week when we'll be back. I think Alex might be calling in. He might be away next week, but we'll see about that. If you have any questions or comments for us, hit us up. You can call our phone number, 503-694-9314. Leave us a message, and sometimes we play them on the show. You can also email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Michael Scott Podcast Company. We're on Twitter at Michael Scott Pod. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. Which we've been kind of vamping up, and Ryan's been doing some artwork for us on there, so go check that out. Of course, special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who runs our social media and does all our artwork, and to Open Signal, a community media center in Portland where we record our show.
Yeah, thanks again to anyone who has. Thank you all for listening, of course, and enjoying this show with us, The Office, and our show. If you have sent in a question, take, email, message, whatever, and we haven't gotten into it yet, I'm sorry. Just remember, I forget it, brother.
Oh, that's it for today. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week.
Bibbidi boppity, give me the zoppity.
Yes, sir.
Well, my name's Michael Scott, and I'm here to say I'm about to do the song in a major way. You jump to the right and you shake a hand, and you jump to the left and you shake that hand. You meet new friends, you tie some yarn, and that's how you do the scone. You jump to the right and you shake that hand, and you jump to the left and you shake that hand. Meet new friends, tie that yarn, that's how you do the scone. You jump to the right and you shake that hand, and you jump to the left and you shake that hand. Meet new friends, tie that yarn, that's how you do the scone.
If doing the scone is gay, then I'm the biggest queer on earth.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac, or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.